Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about happiness, group happiness. Yes, and a happy group dynamic so that we can really get somewhere, well, speedily and successfully and have people really go, wow, that was a good experience. So, as we often do on this show, since it is not scripted, it goes wherever we take it, let's start with a basic question, and then we'll see what people would like to talk about. So, within our context, within the context of a mediation, a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, something where there needs to be consensus building and a successful conclusion, even a workshop and a seminar, what creates a positive group dynamic? How do we do such a thing? What creates a positive group dynamic so that we have happy participants? And quite frankly, we're happy too. So we've got happy participants and a happy leader. Hey, that's all a good thing. Yes. Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. And thank you for taking the time to listen and to participate. I think the first thing we're going to be talking about, because quite a few people are saying it, is to have a welcoming leader. That would be us. A leader who's very welcoming. Yes. And then we're going to talk about the process, right? Yeah, because that makes a difference too. People, I'm going to call it process efficiency and transparency, because that's what folks are talking about, kind of how it's going, how we lead, really. I think the next one up, our next topic for today is going to be something near and dear to all of our hearts, yes? The civility rules, right? Yes, because they're really the only rules that Recipe for Peace Now has. And, of course, they're flexible because we're flexible people and practical. But we never are flexible about the fact that we need to be civil to one another. At its very base, the civility rules say we will not be rude to anyone. Yes, we will not tolerate it. I think our next topic is going to be team building, right? The whole group is a team, of course, because we need to work together. But you might, if you have complex issues and a lot of participants, or maybe, well, yeah, usually a lot of participants, you might make teams, kind of subcommittees, to look at a single issue very in-depth and then report to the others, to the group at large. This cannot be overstated. A lot of people are talking about what I'm going to call physical comfort. Yeah, and that does make a big difference. It makes a difference how people are feeling if it's a nice event, right? Yeah. And, yeah, a lot of people are talking with physical comfort. They're talking about setting up for the food because, of course, Recipe for Peace Now thinks that we should all get together and have something to eat. Because the food is a tool to, well, to have a timeout maybe if we need to reposition and need to talk to somebody about something, perhaps the civility rules, right? You need to have a little private chat with somebody, right? It breaks up any kind of dispute, any kind of monotony really, right? I mean, you don't have to be fighting with each other to have a break and to have a nice treat. And it gives us something to really bond over and something to talk about that we're not going to be mad about. How about what is that? How'd you make it? It's fabulous, right? Yeah. And we might even have our leader, or maybe somebody who's even better at it than the leader, come with something to cook in front of all of us so that we can all participate. I used to call that cooking together, participating in putting together a recipe of a food, usually a stir fry, because it's the easiest, right? If you have a stove in your facilities and a refrigerator, hopefully, for the ingredients. But yeah, because it's easy and it's fast and it smells good and everybody likes it. And I come with a big rice cooker full of rice. It's one of the few things I own that only does one thing. But, ooh, it's such a good thing because that's always a nice addition to any kind of a meal to have a nice starch like a rice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but it's, and I used to say, well, cook together, but I've been informed that it's really everybody watching somebody cook, and that is true. It's like a cooking demo. Well, because, well, yeah, it comes all pre-chopped, and you throw it in the pan, and, yeah, stir fry. Mm-hmm. I have a big wok with a handle. It's all good. Okay, so let's talk about these. So that's food as a tool to really get us together and do something fun. Eating is fun, right? And it gives us a chance to kind of take 3 deep breaths and get to know each other a little better, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true, too. I will admit this. People are saying that the food is also to keep everybody from wandering off during a break so that you're all still in the room and you can all sit back down with your plate and think about things, right? Right. Yeah, it is. I like to have something so that people have to go to the bathroom and stuff, but don't kind of to be herded back into the room. See, if there's something delicious, you'll take a quick bathroom break, a quick smoke, and come running back in because you want yours, right? Right. And it's kind of a way to keep the group together and convivial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we'll talk about food much in greater depth later because we're going to hopefully have time for a recipe. I'm going to try to do that. Okay, so let's start with the first topic that we talked about, the welcoming of the leader, right? How welcoming is the leader? Yeah, Hussein and others are saying that the leader's job to make introductions and have everyone say something about themselves. Yes, I personally like name tags. I know some people hate them. I like them, I think, because I do a lot of these, and I'm not that good with names. And that's the truth. I think it's for my convenience. And I assume that the other, because we don't always meet so frequently in person, necessarily. Sometimes we're Skyping and like that. And even when we're Skyping, I ask everyone to say their name before they say something. So we all know who's who, what's what, and who's talking, right? It's really secretly for me, and that's the truth because I can't remember names real well. And quite frankly, I have usually more than one, as in more than several, negotiation, mediation, whatever it is we're doing at the same time. And quite frankly, and I mean this in the nicest way, people start to look the same. Yeah, so, but I think because that's my problem, I think that everybody has that problem. And secretly, they would kind of like to be able to read your name just to remind themselves which one you are. I really think that. And you should say your name before you Skype and like that each time you talk. So in a conference call especially, because then everybody knows what's going on and who's who and what's what, especially me as leader. So I think it's very important to welcome everyone each time, to welcome them by name, right, because now it's on their chest or they've said it. And to have a moment, which is not a wasted moment. People go, oh, it's a waste of time. No, it's not. It's consensus building, and it is leads to good group dynamic. To each time, see how everybody is and what they've been doing and what they'd like to share. In addition to what they'd like to share about the issues at hand, right? Let's say hi to each other. Let's find out something about each other. Let's see if we're all getting closer to the middle, right? Yeah, especially when people have started out kind of far apart. But that's not necessary. Let's do it for everybody. Let's do it for every group. Because it's fun and it's interesting and we want to know about each other because people are naturally curious about other people. Yeah. Yes. Yes, sometimes people do something personal and it takes a little longer, but that's okay. As long as it doesn't take the entire session. But, I mean, you could have 5 minutes to talk about something that's important. Yeah, the other day, I actually had a participant member who was having a medical issue and asked the group if they'd ever had it and if they knew a good doctor in the area, in their area. I don't think that's out of line. I know it has nothing to do with the issues, but then again, how you're feeling really is just a way to make the group dynamic stronger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people were very receptive to it and tried to be helpful. Right? Yeah. And then everybody else felt good about it because they knew that if they had something that was really critical and they really, really needed to bring, they really needed help with, and they were asking everybody, this group was everybody. You could inquire. Yeah. And there were some very helpful comments, and people looked at their phones and they wrote down their doctor that they thought was pretty good and handed it and gave it to them and like that. Yeah. And that is group dynamic building, right? It makes us colleagues, maybe even friends, depending on the group, right? I mean, you don't have to be friends, but you might become friends, right? Yeah. And at least friendly. Yeah, and that makes, and I approve of that. I really do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it can't take the whole time, but it needs to, those kinds of things are fine, those personal things. They add to the group dynamic, and they add to the welcoming of the leader. We welcome you as people. We welcome you as individuals. We welcome you not just as pieces of a wheel, as cogs in a wheel that got forced to be here to look at these issues. No, we welcome you as humans to make the world a better place. And if we can make the world a better place for you, hey, we're in. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, Alex and others, are saying that it's good to have people, when you do the round talk about, to say their goal for being a participant, what they kind of would like, what they kind of would expect. I do that the first time because I want to know. I do it maybe midway so we see how we're getting closer to the middle, but that's a judgment call as leader because you don't want to do it midway and find out that people still think they're really far away because that'll be discouraging, right? So that's a judgment call on your part. Best with a group that wasn't so far away from each other to begin with. Right? Yeah. So that's a judgment call. You have to think on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. People are saying, Elizabeth and others are saying that you need to be able to welcome questions. Yes, please. You can always ask questions. You can, but in a civil manner, of course. I mean, the civility rules are everywhere. We're going to talk about that. But, and I like clarification questions. Because if you just nod your head and say no problem when you get an assignment, I kind of like to know that you really understood what it was that was meant by the assignment. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sometimes people have that, and it kind of is a problem. They just don't exactly realize it. Does that make sense? Yes. And that's important, too. It is. that's an important component that says, you know, let's think about this. Let's think about whether or not we are on the same track, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, that has to do with your welcome and also with asking questions, right? You can also ask questions maybe during the timeouts, mm-hmm, when we're over food, and maybe ask it of a smaller group. Mm-hmm. You can always email me with a question, yeah? And I'll try to get the answer if you don't know it, or put you in the right path. I like questions because it shows me how we're doing and if everybody's kind of working towards the same goal, or somebody has accidentally gone a little sideways, which happens a lot. I mean, people don't mean to, but they've got this idea in their head, and they think that's what they're supposed to do, and they've kind of gone sideways on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are talking already about the 5W questions. They are going to permeate everything, just like the civility rules, because the 5W questions are always important. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. You don't ask them all at the same time. Maybe. I mean, you might. But that goes to the how we doing with the participants. That goes to why do you think that? Who told you that? When did you learn it? Yeah. We want to get to the bottom of things, right? We want to be able to understand what's going on so that we can have empathy, which is understanding, not agreement. Empathy is understanding, not agreement, right? Not necessarily agreement, but it sure is understanding. And we want to know if we are going to need to really reach consensus and really change people's minds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 5W questions always come in handy as we go along as leader, right? Because we are good at it, and it's really part of the process. We'll find out the reason people have this idea and how we can all get together towards the middle and reach consensus so that we can go forward. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which leads us to our second topic, right? Which is the process, efficiency in the process, and transparency. And that the 5W questions are part of that efficiency and transparency so that we can understand our fellow participants and, you know what, understand the leader too. Because we are part of the team as leader. We're just team leader, right? Yeah. And we have ideas also. So it's very important to really get down to why we're here, what we're doing, and really what success looks like. Yeah. What's our goal, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And Thomas and others are saying that you need to admit when you need help with organizing matters. Yes, you do. You need to admit when you need help with organizing matters. If efficiency is hard, or there's a whole lot of people in the group, or they're very far-flung, yeah, it's hard to get together and choose a time and like that, and there's a lot of passing up and back of information, and everybody needs to be kept in the loop, I think you're going to need help. At least I'm going to need help, depending on how organized I guess you are, and depending on if this is your only group. I mean, if this is your only group and you can concentrate fully on this one subject, these issues, maybe not, but I still think you're going to need help. I really advocate, yes, thank you. Suki and others are talking about a paid assistant. I advocate for a budget for that, if you possibly can, because it's invaluable. It's somebody to keep track of stuff, right? And that leads to your efficiency and to your transparency, too, because at the beginning you say, you know, everybody's going to be kept in the loop. This is how it works, right? Remember that you've done it a gazillion times, but your participants, this may be their first, yeah? And so it's very, very important that they really think of things and they really understand and they get to ask questions and you don't kind of miss an important piece of information because it seems obvious to you because you've done it so many times. But of course it's not obvious to them, right? Yeah. I actually have my assistant sent out, I'll confess, a kind of a form, but you know, the kind where you put the person's name on it, but it's really not individually written. I actually send out an email, kind of a letter, today's letter, right, that gives a little outline of what's going to happen, right, just from a procedural standpoint. And I talk about, oh, time limits on speaking and the civility. It's just a little, this is how we're going to do it, and we're going to play nice type informational. Just so everybody knows, I do this with all groups, even the ones that look like they're kind of on the same page. The reason being is that you don't know if they are or not. Yeah, you really don't. You can't tell until you get into it, and that's my welcome to the group. Mm-hmm. And my assistant sends it out. Okay, a lot of you are talking, Harris and others are talking about interns and volunteers. Yes, they're fabulous. If you can't possibly get a paid assistant to really be an overseer for everything, well, try. Try to get that budgeted. It's really important. You can use an intern or an intelligent intern or volunteer. The problem is that they are usually fairly short-term. And they need some training. And by the time you get them trained and up and running and really efficient, their time's kind of up, right? Yeah. Now, I say this, but sometimes that isn't true, especially if you're easy to work for. Recipe for Peace now is kind of popular. And we do have interns. We don't rely on them initially for any kind of efficiency. We assume that they are there to learn and to do kind of peripheral things, and to assist, and to help with the general group dynamic, right, and help with the research, because they're really good at research, right, and with some sort of technology. Mm-hmm. Now, interns are usually an intern for one school cycle, because they're usually MBAs from a college, from a university. And they're master's students, yes. I'll talk about that in a second. So they're there for one school cycle, a semester, a term, whatever you want to call it. And they get credit for it. Now, a lot of times our interns kind of stay on and become volunteers. And sometimes they can do an internship, volunteer for a school cycle, and then do another internship, right? Yeah. So we keep them oftentimes a long time because they're interested in our work and we're good to work for. So that has to do with a happy group dynamic too. Because don't forget, everybody's in your group, not just the participants who get solved. They get their successful outcome and then they go off and do it. And they come back for different issues, but you know what I mean. They're kind of temporary too. But your staff is part of the group dynamic also, right? Yeah. So you have to be kind of picky, I think, about even your volunteers and your interns. We don't generally take volunteers from the public. Too iffy, too hard to train, right? We take volunteers from our interns, of course, as I just described, and also from organizations who have corporate people, corporate experts, volunteer their time to help with worthy causes, or worthy cause. And people like us too, and then those people stay a while too. But they usually have like a year, and then they go on. Then they go on to a different organization. Even if they liked you, they're supposed to go on, although they do recommend you to the next group of people. But yeah, so there's organizations that do that around here. Yeah, isn't that fun? It's fabulous because they are really attuned to what needs to be done in the process and efficiency and like that. Mm-hmm. And they help immensely, although they are very opinionated. Yeah. So I like those kind. Those are unpaid people who are fabulous. Then we have a paid person who's kind of the overseer and who can really come and tell you as leader stuff about, well, participants, interns, volunteers, and like that, so that if things are not going smoothly or somebody is kind of going off the rails, you as leader can have a little talk with them and straighten things out before you hit critical mass, right? Now, people are asking about the level of intern. I'm going to say it depends. It depends what you're doing. I mean, if you're leading a group that is specialty in some way, like something to do with schools, which I don't generally do, you might want the level of intern or interested people from the level that you're dealing with so that you understand the school system, for example. Because I don't know anything about the school system, really, right? I would need somebody I'd need them as an expert because they're living it, right? Yeah. And yeah, the same thing with all kinds of different kinds of groups. Yes, people are talking about all kinds of social service stuff, like homelessness. Well, gee, let's ask people who have been homeless how it works, how the services work, how people find you, all kinds of questions that we as people sitting in a nice office don't know the answer to because we've never experienced it. So I would say that these people are not so much interns as experts to be called upon to give opinions and to give understanding of the issues to the group, right? Yeah. In that case, experts come from all walks of life and have to do with what we need, right? Right. But that's different. I think to have interns and volunteers like that, they have to have a certain level of efficiency within themselves, right? I don't like to say a certain level of learning, although quite frankly, we tend to get interns from master's programs at the university just because they can get credit and we are popular because we understand that you need to learn. Does that make sense? Yeah. Younger than that, listen, and they've got some experience. Usually they're really adults. I don't know. I've never actually had interns for – people are talking about interns from a high school. Well, it would be a good experience for them. Okay. Some of you are with groups, and you're the leader, that – have more opportunity for, I'm not going to say less skilled, but for less experienced people in the business world. And I do business usually, so that makes a difference, business mediation. I do with multinationals and like that. And some organizations, but my organizations aren't usually, okay, I'll give an example a lot of people are giving. Quite a few of you, Charles and others, work with organizations that do ecology-type things, right? And there's projects like cleanup and projects like go someplace and help. And those are fabulous for younger people because it teaches them social responsibility. Yes, and there's some of you that work for like food banks and stuff. Same thing, fabulous, teaches responsibility, and you don't have to come with a lot of prior knowledge, right, to gain it. So that when you become a master's degree student, you can intern with us because you have a lot of responsibility genes. You've been taught it. And you understand people because you've dealt with lots of people. And like that, yeah, it's a way to gain experience, and it's fabulous. And if you've got that kind of a group, please do. Please train our young people to be responsible adults so that when I get them, they're fabulous, which they are. Yes. So, yeah, that's the key to it. You need to really understand what your assistant is going to be doing with your intern, right? Yeah. Yeah, and people are talking about standardized training process. Yes, if you're going to keep having interns doing the same thing, there should be a training period, a training class, something so that they all know exactly what it is they're supposed to be doing, and so they can meet expectations because they understand what the expectations are. Yeah. Which is half the battle. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the civility rules. Oh, yes, people are talking about interns and volunteers and also about paid staff, that you have to tell them there's a time commitment. True. That's a true statement. Yeah, they have to understand that it's going to take some effort, and they have some obligation, showing up obligation, really, is what it is. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the civility rules. The civility rules are really the only rules the Recipe for Peace now has. They basically say we will not be rude to each other. If you're not civil, you don't have a good group dynamic. Nobody's happy. And people feel, oh, I don't want to go to that no more, right? That ruins your enthusiasm level, which means they're not happy. You're not happy. Because you're having trouble getting people to come and to truly participate. No one is happy. That's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So remember, civility rules permeate everything. I personally announce them. I announce them even if I've got a small group and I'm fairly certain that they're going to be civil. Because in the heat of things, you never know. And I want to be able to say, wait, civility rules, right? And everybody understand it. The civility rules need to be announced. I really do think they need to be announced, right? On paper, well, you'll see how you think about that, but announced, maybe even each time, depending on the group. And they need to be enforced immediately. Don't wait until things go bad. It's too late. Yes, that is an old expression, and I think it might be an Americanism, but there's an old, people are giving me the expression that the horse has already left the barn, right? You don't leave the door open. The horse has already left the barn. You have to close the gate first. And that's how the civility rules are. You have to enforce them immediately, before things get out of hand, consistently, as in every time, even though you're getting mighty sick of saying the word civility rules, right? And fairly. Mm-hmm. As a third party impartial, you cannot favor one side over another and let someone hog the floor and keep talking like that and not let somebody else give their opinion, right? For example. Mm-hmm. Immediately, announce them, and then enforce them immediately, consistently, that means every time, and fairly, impartially. Mm-hmm. Oh, good point that a whole bunch of you were making, yes, Muhammad and others, that the leader must model the civility rules. We're it. We're the good example because we're the leaders, right? We need to model the civility rules. We need to never lose our temper or get rude. Ever, ever, never, ever. Right? Model the civility rules. We're it. We are important. as setting the standard for the group, right? If we don't do it, the civility rules, we lose our temper, we get rude, we roll our eyes. No. If we don't model the civility rules, we cannot enforce them for others. We've been a bad example, and we are never bad examples, right? Right. I don't care what you think of those people. We're going to have civility rules for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, people are saying they're always in effect. Let's talk about time. People are asking about what happens if somebody really kind of breaches the civility rules. What do you do? Well, one of the ways that's very common for people to breach the civility rules, and they don't realize it, well, maybe they do, but they ignore it, is people get excited and they want to do all the talking. And we want to hear from everybody, even the people who are kind of hiding in the back, because they've got something to say. They're just kind of shy. And unless called upon, they won't say it. So if we've got that kind of situation going and we're not getting a good up and back, and some and people really want to present their position, right? I put time limits on everybody talking, reasonable ones, because then we hear from everyone, especially if we're trying to flesh out what we're going to do about this when we have several options, right? Yeah. Want to really hear everybody's opinion. Want to really reach consensus on this, right? So I make time limits. I mean, it might be a fairly long time limit. It might be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be 60 seconds. That's too short. And then a time for questions and answers and like that. Just, it's an efficiency thing. We don't want to have a 9-hour meeting. We're busy people. I know that a lot of you are advocating time limits counting in different ways and that the leader does it. You know, nowadays you can set the timer on your cell phone and hold it up. Mm-hmm. And that's effective. I'm afraid that I do it in a very primitive manner. The reason being that everyone thinks they haven't gotten their full time because the time clicks away real fast, right? Yeah. And I like everyone to understand that they have, that I, as leader, haven't in some way cheated them on their time, set the clock wrong. I actually use an old-fashioned kitchen timer. I do. I use a kitchen timer that goes tick, 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 ding, like that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's an oven timer because you need more than the one-minute one. But it's real fair, and you can see it, and you can hear it. And you know when it goes ding, we're on to the next thing, which may be the next person, or questions for another 5 minutes or something, right? Yeah, tick, 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 ding. Then everybody knows that they have had exactly the same amount of time as everybody else. That's an interesting question. Evan and others are asking if I allow the people in the back to donate their time to somebody they agree with because they don't want to speak and the other person would like more time. I'm going to say it depends. I would generally, as a general rule, I would like to hear from the people in the back. I'd like to know what they think. I would. I'd like to know their opinions. I'd like them not to be kind of overshadowed in the group by somebody who's got kind of a stronger personality. Does that make sense? Yeah. Somebody who's kind of, well, I'm not going to go for pushy. Some of you are going for pushy. It's like, yeah, pushy. Well, no. I'm going to go for somebody who's more more experienced public speaker. Sometimes I'll allow that after we've heard from the people in the back, right? Kind of towards the middle or end of the negotiations when we're getting somewhere and like that. If I feel that the person who's going to speak truly represents the interests of the silent partner. But I don't like people not to participate and to kind of be secondary. I'd really like to hear from them. I would. Even if they just kind of say, you know, I really agree with fill in the blank and think that we should do it that way, and I'd like to hear more from him or her. Okay. You can give them your few minutes, but I'd like to really hear that. And not feel that somehow somebody has bullied one of my participants. Right. Yeah. I don't want to think that that's a possibility. People are asking what you do with people who do bully. Yeah. George and others are saying that's what the timeouts are for. Yes. That's why we've got the food in the room and the ability to have a timeout called. And when we do a timeout, we kind of all disperse and we go and have something to eat and like that. It gives the leader a moment, well, more than a moment, to take aside someone who's being a bully and determine whether or not that's kind of accidental and has to do with their horrible personality. No, it has to do with their personality and they don't realize it or they think it's funny. I ask the 5W questions. I want to know what's going on and why you're not meeting my civility rules, right? And give them a little reminder that everyone is of value. Sometimes, in fact, frequently, that works. If you've got someone who truly is not experienced with team playing, right, they will, I ask them to think about it, and sometimes I sit next to them, and if they accidentally go off again, I kind of just give them a little pat on their hand, and they go, oh, and they let somebody else talk, and they didn't realize it. Some people have the kind of personality, and I know that we've seen this within our experience, and the kind of mannerism that always seems aggressive. You ever have that? Yeah. And they're really not as aggressive as they seem. They've just got that way about them. Yeah, men and women. People are saying men. I see a lot of women in the business world because they've gotten kind of a persona that's kind of tough, especially women who've been in the business world quite a while. Yeah, when I started out, there weren't very many women, and you had to really be assertive. Now, it is my personal nature. I am well-spoken, obviously, and I am a good leader. And I actually, to this day, as a model of the civility rules, I have to remember to let everybody talk and to really remember to have everybody take a turn and like that, because I understand that some people are kind of your participants, are kind of natural leaders, too. They're not the leader of this group exactly, but and sometimes they are from an employment level that has to do with supervising. It has to do with leadership, right? And so they're kind of in leadership mode. But we want to hear from everybody, right? And sometimes they don't realize it. So you have a little talk with them. That's what the food is for. We have a little time out to kind of have a little talk and say, you know, when that happens again, I'm just going to kind of pat your hand, sit next to me. Yeah. And so it's not real obvious and nobody's embarrassed. Now, sometimes these people are extremely obnoxious, deliberately. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, too. Deanne and others are saying sometimes they've actually been sent to disrupt the group. They're kind of like spies. Yeah, they are disruptive deliberately because they don't want the group to succeed. Mm-hmm. You got to find that out, too. That's why we ask the 5W questions in private. These people are dismissed from the group. Bye-bye. Mm-mm. Not here. Not under my watch. Mm-hmm. They are dismissed from the group even if they are kind of supposed to be there, as in they've been assigned to the group by an authority figure above all of us. One of my rules is when I become the leader of a, for example, a multinational interdepartmental group in a big organization, one of my rules is before I take on the task, especially if they're already a group that has failed, I want autonomy to dismiss. Mm-hmm. And dismissal usually impacts employment adversely. I want it as a threat, is what I'm telling you, also. Because I don't really want to dismiss people, especially those on a certain corporate level who need to be there. I want to be able to threaten it and have it be a something with teeth, right? Have it impact your position in your employment because you're supposed to do this consensus building thing. I have that sometimes in workshops and seminars, surprisingly enough, because people are forced to go and they don't want to, and they're hoping that they can end the class early is what's going on. And I recognize that right away. I apply peer pressure, right, and point out that this is mandatory, that you are going to be interested because you'd like to know these things. It's important. And then if you are, fill in the blank and point to him, you especially need it, right? Right. Mm-hmm. That's peer pressure. Because the other people in the seminar and the workshop would really like to know all about it, and they wish that you wouldn't interrupt so that they can get full measure and really learn something, and not have it go further, longer than its expected time, because they've got someone picking them up, right? Yeah. So it's peer pressure. Mm-hmm. And I am not adverse to going to somebody's supervisor, even if that supervisor is the president of the company. I mean, sometimes my participants are quite high up in the corporate world. And the fact that they have that kind of mindset really means that they do need the information. They do need the seminar, the workshop. They do need to consensus build within a group, within a team, right? Yeah, they need to understand that they are a team member, right? And they particularly do. So we're going to particularly make somebody tell them to play nice. Mm-hmm. I usually come with on those meetings because I want to make them understand that they're learning something of importance. Take three deep breaths and open your mind, right? Yeah. And they really are, too. If nothing else, yes, thank you. If nothing... Erica and others are saying, if nothing else, it'll make them understand self-control. Well, maybe that's the point. Self-control might be the point. Because they're probably not real successful leaders because they're leading by intimidation and not by enthusiasm. And they are not modeling the civility rules. Yeah. So get help. Before I take something on, I make sure that help is available. that I'm going to be backed up, right? Yeah. Speaking of which, let's get on to our next topic. Oops, we're going to run out of time, I think. Well, I'm going to try to make it to the at least one of the recipes. I think that's kind of a short one. Okay, I know you guys like it, and we run out of time sometimes. But we're having a wonderful discussion, which leads us to the topic of creating a team, right? Remember that you as leader are part of the team. Yep, we're all in it together. And the main thing about a team is you want to define the goal and what success looks like. Because if you don't have that, if you haven't defined the goal and what success looks like, how will you know when you've got it? Yeah, how will you know when you've reached success, for heaven's sakes? So let's define the goal and find out what success looks like. Yes, yes. Do it on paper. All right, people are talking about a mission statement. Okay, we've talked about mission statements in prior shows, archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Don't forget the now, recipeforpeacenow.com. On prior shows. A mission statement, I don't do them always. It's not like announcing the civility rules and the 5W questions and like that. It depends on the group. Some groups don't need a mission statement. They know what on earth it is that they're doing, right? Some groups understand what the goal is and what success looks like because it's well-defined in and of itself. We need to get on a ballot and get voted for affirmatively, right? Hell, that's a goal. We need to change this law, this problem, this social problem. That's a goal. And the question is how to get there. But the mission is clear. But we need this team, this group, this leader to help us achieve the goal, the mission. Some groups benefit from making an actual mission statement. That's a judgment call on the part of the leader. People ask me when I break out the mission statement idea. I do it if it will be a consensus builder for the group. I don't do it often because I do think it's somewhat of a time waster. And then people argue about the wording and what does it mean and like that. I do it for groups that need it to be in their hand, that need it to think about. I'm going to say that in my case, I usually do it for groups that are very diverse and the goal is not straightforward. So we need to know what success looks like. Because it may be such a big goal that we're in the step-by-step stage. And we need to know which step this is so that we're not just circling or going backwards. So we're really pushing forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. I do it with multinational groups who have different reasons for wanting the same goal and are defining success differently because of it. What they really want is the same outcome, but the outcome will be success, but why they want it is different. So they have to all understand, although they're very diverse, they all want the same outcome and what that outcome is. Right? Right. Yeah, people are asking for an example. A very simple example, which is not was not particularly international, but it needed a lot of help. Yeah, people are talking about Rotary, which I happen to belong to. Rotary is more of like minds than you think it is, because people self-select to be a Rotarian. And the motto is service above self. And that means that you are willing to help other people around the world, not usually Rotarians even, with some sort of a horrible difficulty. And those people around the world really can't pay you back. They can't do it. They can't. There's nothing that they can give you in return, really, except gratitude. So that's a self-selected group. Sometimes people in the room are there because they want the outcome, but they're very different, and they need to understand they are a team because they want the same goal. You know, in the United States, marijuana is illegal. It is still federally illegal. And people, groups worked kind of individually to try to get the federal government to change their minds, right? It's a tough thing because our country, the United States, is very diverse, and you know, politicians are elected by the people, and politicians are scared of their electorate. Some electorates are more conservative. Some states are more conservative than others. So you didn't get anywhere. No matter who said they thought it was a good idea. I mean, the Surgeon General said it was a good idea, but it didn't help. So we had to change course and do something wildly imaginative. This has never been done before. We wanted to get on for people to vote to legalize marijuana in their state. Very weird, because the federal government, the federal laws supersede state laws. We were asking for something that was federally illegal to be legal in a state. In order to do such a crazy thing, we needed to have a lot of support, especially with the beginning, but now too. I mean, it's going kind of slow. And a lot of very diverse groups, diverse people with real serious interests that were not the same, had to get together for this, had to really make the media push, had to really make the ballot push, had to really get the signatures, right? You had people who had a commercial interest, growers, shopkeepers, like that. You had people who were sick, but not just one kind of sick, all kinds of sick that had to do with different organizations, right? That's completely different interest. You had people that were interested in recreational. They would like to use marijuana. They enjoy it, right? You had people who were interested in the government side of it, the regulatory side of it, right? Yeah, all kinds of. We actually got together with law enforcement, with people that took statistics about the effects of marijuana and whether or not it was going to hurt the driving, whether people were going to drive intoxicated on that, and whether it was worse than drinking. We had all kinds of folk in the room. But they all understood that they had a common goal, legalization, and a common idea of what success would look like, and that it would benefit them. But they all needed to keep understanding that we're working together. See, that's the ticket. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, we're going to run out of time and not do the recipes. We'll try to get to them next time. We have like 2 more minutes. So the idea is to create the team, right? And let's talk quickly about physical comfort. Cannot be overrated. A convenient location, a comfortable location. Everybody's got a chair, right? Everybody's got a place to be. It would be nice if it had some sort of facilities for warming food, for example. But it doesn't have to. I mean, people bring it. It'll be nice in the room. Just the air conditioning is the air quality is good. The bathroom is nearby. That kind of good stuff. You know, it seems kind of simplistic, but it's not. It makes a big difference, yeah, to whether or not it's fun to go to. I like my groups to be fun. I want people to feel like, ooh, I can't wait to go the next time. That was fabulous. We're really getting somewhere. And I really liked it. I enjoyed it. And I will make a real effort to put it in my calendar. And it'll supersede other stuff because it's that group's really, really getting somewhere. And it's good. And I like the people. I think they're interesting. There you go. So next time we will do the rest of these, hopefully, because, my friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want to find us, would recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.